should have on the line with us right now, Eve Engler. I mean, I'm speaking about, of course, Eve Engler, Canadian author, activist, and journalist, co-writer of Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, and most recently, writer of the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. Let's see if we've got him. Eves, are you here with us today?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm on my way to Windsor.
Okay. So you're actually on a bus right now.
Yeah, I'm on a bus and have an event in Windsor tonight, and then tomorrow night in Hamilton.
So it's one of those kind of tours, sleeping on friends' basements and things like that.
Yeah, lots of busing, not enough sleeping, but it's been fun so far.
Yeah, I hope you are able to be well rested for tomorrow. There's a lot of people looking forward to you attending. And how many cities are you covering in this tour right now?
I think I've done about 8 or 9 events, 6 or 7 different cities, and I'm going to be about at 25-30 by the end of it in late June.
And this is Canada, then?
Yeah, all across Canada.
Not bad for a Canadian tour, up to 30 cities. Well, of course, it's very important because your book is of subject matter very important to Canadians generally. And I guess, again, your book, The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, I mean, it's about not just our foreign policy today, but the way Canada has looked at the world and interacted with other countries in the past century or more. You know, what would you say is the basic premise underlying your book right here?
I think one of the what's come to me from this is that Canadian foreign policy is motivated above all else by a support for empire, historically the British Empire, more recently the American Empire. And secondly, support for Canadian corporate interests, Canadian corporate investments around the world, be that the Canadian banks that have dominated the English Caribbean for the last 100 years, or Canadian mining companies operating around the world today.
Well, it's my understanding that the Canadian government or Canadian industries, banks, corporations, and so forth, were interested in having physical colonies in the Caribbean. Like Canada actually wanted Britain to hand over its colonies and put them under Canadian administration at a certain point. But that never came to pass, did it?
No, but yes, starting in the late 1800s, Canadian insurance companies and banks in the English Caribbean who had a significant presence already by then, who had been even going back to 1837, had a presence in the English Caribbean. They pushed for the Canadian government to annex the British colonies in the English Caribbean, and the Canadian government actually formally put a request in to London at the Imperial War Cabinet of just after the First World War. To take over the British colonies in the English Caribbean. And the reason Canada put this proposal forward at this point was in part because the other dominions of the British Empire, Australia, South Africa, were compensated after the First World War with the German colonies nearby. And without any German colonies near Canada, Ottawa decided that it would make a push to take control of the English Caribbean. And like I said, this had been the sort of push for Canadian control of the English Caribbean had gone back at least 30 or 40 years, promoted by banking and insurance interests primarily.
But we never got these colonies, so it's kind of by accident Canada never became known as a colonial power.
Yeah, I mean, by accident. I guess if you look at Canadian domestically, in terms of First Nations, I think that it would be a mistake to call Canada not a colonial power. But certainly in terms of outside of current day Canada, but it wasn't because of a lack of desire on the part of Canadian political leaders. And actually, even Prime Minister Borden in the mid 1910s had plans to expand Canadian, one Canada to build an empire to compete with the Americans in Central America. So it wasn't for a lack of desire on the part of Canadian politicians.
Well, there was this Canadian interest in Latin America and the Caribbean, just as there still is. But you had written with Anthony Fenton the book on Haiti, Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. So was it a natural transition to go from writing a book specifically about Haiti to writing about Canadian foreign policy more generally?
Yeah, well, this book really does come out of my role in the Canada-Haiti Action Network and the Haiti Solidarity Movement. And just on a personal level, going into the situation in Haiti, and that's being in February 2004, the Canadian government supported the Bush administration's role in overthrowing Haiti's elected government and supported a brutal dictatorship for 25 months that killed thousands of people. I have to say, maybe a little bit naive about Canadian foreign policy going into this work in the Haiti Solidarity Movement. I didn't necessarily think that Canada was only acted for world peace or to help the poor children outside of Canada. But I didn't think that Canada or Ottawa acted like Washington did in international affairs. And participating in the Haiti Solidarity Movement, just learning about the extent to which the Canadian government bullied and supported this crime against the Haitian people, I was really taken aback. And so basically my aim after the sort of worst of the political repression in Haiti subsided, I decided I would take a look to see whether Canada, the Canadian government, Canadian corporations, Canadian institutions, had acted in similar ways as they've been acting and are still acting in Haiti elsewhere in the world. And simultaneously, part of the motivation for writing this book was that I found that when working on Haiti solidarity work, it was often we tell Canadians that for instance, the Canadian International Development Agency was funding this very partisan Haitian human rights organization that was behind this report that was justified the imprisonment of the constitutional prime minister, constitutional interior minister, and that CETA, the Canadian International Development Agency, was providing this very partisan financing for this imprisonment. We tell Canadians this, and I found that many Canadians had a hard time believing that the Canadian government would act in such a way, because they believe, as do most Canadians, according to many studies, 9 in 10 Canadians believe that Canada is a force for good in the world. Canadians have the highest self-appraisal of their country's foreign policy. So part of the aim of this book is really to take on this mythology of the peacekeeping and Lester Pearson and Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, so obviously a major component of this book is the idea that, Canada is a force for good in the world. So you say that this is a real idea among Canadians. Like, really, when you do the studies, Canadians honestly believe that our country does better things in the world than other countries?
Well, that's what the studies suggest. A number of studies have done, surveys have asked people in a number of different countries, and Canadians consistently come out as having the highest self-appraisal.
I suppose that's one of the reasons this book is so important. When you talk about Haiti and you talk about supporting empire, I mean, there's the whole British experience, but you also mentioned that Canada is heavily involved in Iraq right now. And, if we want to believe we're doing good in the world, and most Canadians were against the war in Iraq, I mean, what is it that we're doing in Iraq that caught your attention?
Well, I think the Canadian government didn't participate in the Coalition of the Willing, as we all know. But the Canadian government quietly, behind the scenes, behind Canadians' backs, has supported the U.S. war there in a number of ways. First of all, U.S. troops flew over Canadian airspace, refueled in Newfoundland. Canada was in charge of a task force, 151, a naval brigade in the Arabian Sea in the lead-up to the war, the U.S. war in Iraq. And Liberal government actually had legal opinion that because of Canada's role in being in charge of Task Force 151, Canada was legally at war with Iraq. Canadian General Walt Nadezhnyk, the current commander of the Canadian Army, was in charge of 35,000 troops as the deputy commander of forces in Baghdad. Canadian military trainers helped Americans plan the war from Tampa, Florida, and when the Americans moved their planning station from Tampa to Qatar, at least 25 Canadian military trainers made the move to Qatar. At least 30 Canadian troops were incorporated in U.S. and British units that fought in Iraq. So while other countries that had troops incorporated into U.S. or British units, that other countries that opposed the war, they had their exchange troops, their exchange programs, the troops and exchange programs pulled out of these programs. Canadian government never did this. And then once you see the U.S. Starting to consolidate its occupation, immediately the Chrétien government announces $300 million in aid to Iraq to support the U.S. occupation. So you really had the Canadian government on a number of different ways, mostly behind our backs, supporting U.S. imperialism in Iraq.
Well, again, I mean, you're talking about a de facto state of war with Iraq, and that's something many Canadians would feel uncomfortable with. You know, I think if you go back far enough, and you certainly have, Canada has a pretty consistent history of supporting colonial power. I mean, you mentioned our role in Sudan a bit, I think, don't you? I mean, that goes back, what, to the late 19th century?
Yeah, in 1885, when the British had taken control of Egypt a couple years earlier, and the Egyptians had been in charge of Sudan. There was an uprising against Egyptian and British control over Sudan, and the Brits sent a major expeditionary force, and about 400 Canadians went to go fight on behalf of the British Empire. You take the Boer War in South Africa. From 1889 to 1902, nearly 3,000 Canadian troops went to fight on behalf of the British Empire in Southern Africa, and this was a horrible war in terms of tens of thousands of Boer women and children were put into concentration camps and actually died in concentration camps, and this was really to defend British imperial interests, particularly mining interests that Cecil Rhodes had uncovered a few years earlier. So you have a long history of Ottawa siding with empire, particularly the British Empire.
Yeah, I mean, in Sudan or the Boer War, I mean, that was empire, unashamed, unapologetic empire. They were proud of the word. And, I mean, now you've got to go to Michael Ignatieff, you know, he calls for a new kindler, gentler type of empire, right? Empire with a human face. Well, I mean, if your book contains information about all of this, that's incredible. So, I mean, you talk about Sudan, Haiti, the Boer War, etc. Now, what other areas, or you know, geographically, topics of interest would you be able to find in that book if you're talking about Canadian involvement?
Well, there's sections on basically the entire world. There's a section on Canada's role in the Americas and Latin America, a section on Canada's role in the Caribbean. So you have found stuff about Canada's role in destabilizing the elected Salvador Allende government in Chile, and then supporting the Pinochet dictatorship, Canada's role in supporting the U.S. war in Vietnam, significant Canadian support for U.S. war in Vietnam, Canada's role in overthrowing or undermining and ultimately helping the Belgians and the CIA assassinate Patrice Lumumba, the Congolese independence leader. The number of different topics around the world, Canadian mining company, the operations of Canadian mining companies, and all the social and environmental upheaval caused by Canadian mining companies today and historically.
Well, I mean, you obviously have a lot to say, a lot of material to put forth in your book. So what would you say is your goal when it comes to the reader? Would you say it's to encourage skepticism? Is it about comprehension? What are you hoping people are going to get from this?
Well, I think on one hand, I hope that in some cases, like some of the solidarity movements, add to the voice of some, you know, communities struggling against Canadian mining companies, for instance, ongoing today. Help the anti-war, anti-imperialist movement in Canada, calling for Canadian troops out of Iraq, support the Haiti solidarity movement. But more generally, I think the aim of the book is really to help us all as Canadians look at what our government officials say regarding the world in a more critical way. The aim is to sort of like get rid of the blinders that we all too often have about our country's role in the world, and to be, as you put it, more skeptical about what Canadian officials are saying or Canadian officials are doing, not just trust that what they're saying is what they're doing around the world. So the aim is really to sort of develop a bit of critical consciousness about Canadian foreign policy, and also I think it's about taking responsibility for if we say that we live in a democracy, we have some level of responsibility to shape what our government's doing around the world in our name, because ultimately they're doing it in the name of Canada, and I think it's our responsibility as citizens to shape that foreign policy in a way that we would want that foreign policy to be shaped.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're doing this. I think it's about time this book was written. It's long overdue. I know you got to get to your next speaking engagement, so I'm going to let you go, but thank you so much for telling us about this. We're going to announce the details of your event on this program, and certainly we'll be encouraging people to come out. So, Yves, thank you so much. What are the ways you can order the book online?
You can go to the website for the book, blackbook.foreignpolicy.ca, blackbook.foreignpolicy.ca, and it should be in the bookstores soon, if it's not already in some of the bookstores, the independent bookstores in Hamilton. The website, blackbook.foreignpolicy.ca.
Okay, great. Well, Yves, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
See you tomorrow. Bye-bye. And, of course, that was Yves Engler, author, journalist, activist. I believe he was written from Rink Rat to Student Radical. He co-wrote Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. And his latest book, hot off the presses, he's just touring with it now with the newest copies, is Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, which, as he said, you can order online.